I was talking with a friend this past week about how things had been going recently. For all intents and purposes, things are great, she said. She's been retired for a number of years. She has her health. She has a partner who loves and challenges her. She is more than able to meet her expenses. Her kids and grandkids are healthy. She gives time to different social service agencies in the area, to hospice, to a homeless shelter. And yet, even though her friends say that she has checked all the boxes, that this is all there is, and yet, even with all of this, despite all of this, there is an emptiness, a void. Right here, she said, right here. Right in that place where many of the ancients said that the heart resides. What physicians call the viscera. Right here, something is missing. Now, sure, she can try and fill it with more things, well-intentioned or not. But at the end of the day, that emptiness remains. In a land far, far away, at a time long, long ago, it was suggested to me, well, really, I was told that I needed to give more time as a priest in my parish. To make it even more clear, I was told that the time which I was spending as a parent and as a partner was taking an inordinate amount of my time and attention, and that I needed to give more hours to my vocation as a priest. I didn't even have that written in the sermon. That's good. Even to this day, I can viscerally remember that feeling of taking it in and having it crush me. It broke me in ways that I cannot even to this day fully describe. It shattered my understanding of who I was and who I was called to be. Really, it felt diabolical. Diabolical, you might say, that's a tad bit extreme. Well, to be clear, I'm not talking or referring to the person who delivered this indictment as an evil spirit or as a devil. Both are common understandings of what the diabolical is. No, I am referring to one of the earliest and simplest definitions of the word diabolical. It comes from the Greek diabolos. Dia meaning through, and bolos meaning to throw. Simply put, to throw something through. In a sermon a few years ago, our bishop of this diocese, Bishop Mark Andrus, explained it this way. Imagine you're looking at a beautiful stained glass window, say the rose window at Grace Cathedral. You see the blues, the reds, the purples, all coming together to illumine a darkened space. And now imagine that someone, possibly yourself, possibly someone else, is picking up a large rock and hurling it through the window, shattering it, breaking it into pieces. This is what it is to be diabolical. It is to break up, to fragment, to disintegrate that which is whole, that which has integrity. The diabolical always seeks to divide, to distract, to disrupt. When I was told to divide myself into slices, and that the slice which was a priest needed to be more, more, and more, what I was essentially being asked to do was to break myself apart in order to give more of one part of me. It took me a long time, many hours of prayer and of support and of contemplation, to realize that, in fact, I am my fullest self when I am whole. And wholeness for me is when I am fully a husband, a father, and a priest, as well as a son, a brother, a friend. To put one fragment of myself over and against the rest only serves to divide and makes less rather than more. This understanding of the diabolical is also present in the sixth chapter of John's Gospel, though we didn't hear it this morning. For some reason, probably because it is unsettling, the framers of the Revised Common Lectionary chose to not include the verses that close this chapter, verses 70 and 71. They read, "Jesus answered them, 'Did I not choose you, the 12? Yet one of you is a devil.' He was speaking of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, for he, though one of the 12, was going to betray him." I would like for us to consider these verses this morning because I believe that they point to something critical in this passage. It is in verse 70 that Judas is referred to as a devil, and the Greek here reads, diabolos. Now, in John's Gospel, there is no mention of pieces of silver or of blood money for Judas's later actions. Remember, in John's Gospel, it is Jesus who presents himself to the guards in the garden. Jesus, in this Gospel, is the actor rather than the recipient. Now, it seems to me that John is deliberately telling us of Judas's actions to serve as a contrast. Because rather than what we hear from Peter and the rest of the 12, Judas's actions will serve to break apart, to fragment, to disintegrate. The diabolical, this disintegration, is found whenever we fail to recognize that material and spirit, the finite and the infinite, are inextricably bound. To separate them is an entirely modern and reductionist approach. One theologian asks it this way: the issue at stake is how often we confuse the body as flesh without spirit with the body as incarnate, flesh with spirit, literally inspired. What John wants us to consider are our misunderstood ways of consumption. We eat up the world without appreciating how God has infused creation with the Spirit. Thus, we use and discard it in crude and materialist ways. The ethical imperative at the heart of John's incarnational theology of the Eucharist is clear. Will we treat the world around us as incarnational or simply as material? Friends, if what we encounter in this world is simply material, then clearing swaths of rainforest for beautiful hardwood is just a means to an end. And trafficking in humans is no different than trafficking in laundry detergent. Seen through this lens, all of what has been created holds no more value than its price. All of life is a commodity. It can be broken apart, packaged, bought, and sold. And yet, this belief that material and spirit are mutually existent was as difficult, even as offensive, in Jesus' time as it can be in ours. Because what it points to is a notion which we find hard to accept. That someone, a person who walked and ate, who wept and drank, someone who was corporal in a body like ours could be this and more. That the material and the spirit exist as one. It is a scandal, really, one which we turn back from all the time. I know that I do. A scandal which ultimately denies our interconnection and interdependence when we turn. And it is this we feel right here when we are torn asunder by the effects of this separation. We know it when we see each other as impossibly other, whether separated by language, culture, orientation, religion, race, gender, politics, class, whatever distinction we choose to draw. We know it when we become so divorced from the creation that we are unable to see our interdependent, essential relationship with it. We know it when our lives, when our relationships, our very selves feel out of joint, broken in pieces. Friends, we live in a time and in a place where what is true and what is real is often confined to what can be named, measured, and controlled. Now, there is some good reason for this, but in the end, I find this reduction to be lacking. For often my experience has been more than the sum of the parts that I can measure. And this is what our gospel is pointing us to this morning. The scandal that in Jesus we see reality as it is, integral, whole, one. The scandal that in Jesus, this embodied life, we can trust, we can even bet our life on. The scandal that when we experience Jesus' life and death and resurrection through story and water and bread and wine, we know that life is in fact not scattered, not fractured. In truth, it is whole and connected and embodied. Now I say point two because that's as good as we get as finite humans. Solomon, in all of his wisdom, understood as much when he said, even heaven and the highest heaven cannot contain you, much less this house that I have built. It is why poets like Mary Oliver get us closer to this mystery than most, because in between their words, they leave room for what cannot be seen. Friends, make no mistake, there are more ways to be divided and distracted than there are friends on Facebook. And some of these ways can even be somewhat useful. But what my friend is yearning, aching for, what I trust we all are longing for, is integration. And this is what I believe Jesus is abiding to be about. For when we abide in Jesus, when we know that there is no separation between the flesh or the material and the spirit, from us and God, then we engage the world around us in necessarily different and changed ways. For when we abide with Jesus, we live this incarnation. When we abide with Jesus, we live a fully integrated life, realizing that our interconnectedness and our interdependence means that we cannot turn back from the person whom we cannot stand. When we abide in Jesus, when we are with and in Jesus, we come face to face with the truth that all of creation is one, that our lives and the lives of the great white shark and the piping plover are bound as one. When we abide in Jesus, we reveal, like he did, to the world the truth that even as custody wars and turf wars and civil wars rage, I am because we are.